Hi, I'm Lori Holden, and you're listening to the Walking Dead Girl Podcast.
Hello, everybody. This is Jasmine.
And this is Michael.
And I'm the Walking Dead Girl. You're listening to The Walking Dead Girl, episode 56. In this podcast, we review and discuss the hit TV show The Walking Dead from AMC. In addition to reviewing the TV episodes right after they air, we sometimes have interviews with special guests.
If you want to give us feedback on the show, you can go over to our website, thewalkingdeadgirl.com, or send us an email to talkback@thewalkingdeadgirl.com. You can also call our voicemail at 1-844-TWD-GIRL. Or you can post a comment on our Facebook page, facebook.com/The Walking Dead Girl Podcast. We routinely read feedback and comments on the show.
Currently, we're not reviewing the TV show because, if you did not know, it has not started yet.
Boo.
But it will soon. In the intro, we heard the actress Lori Holden, who played Andrea in the series.
Yeah, and Andrea, spoiler alert.
No, don't say anything. Well,
come on. If someone hasn't watched the show and they haven't reached this point, please do not listen. This is pointless to listen if you haven't seen all.
Exactly. I'm assuming that
all four seasons.
I'm assuming you've listened to all the podcasts or done watched all of it in one shot or listened to all of it in one shot. Yeah. So you know.
So what do you think of Andrea in general, her character and how it evolved over time and all that stuff, and her demise?
It's like it was a love-hate relationship. Not as much as the governor, because I hated him almost the whole time. But with Andrea, it was kind of, I liked her struggle. I felt the fact that I can love and hate her at different points during the show, is a good thing. I mean, she was a really well-developed character. You could literally see her arc from like someone who didn't know how to do anything to someone who wanted to commit suicide to, you know, now she's like almost kind of like one of the guys in the group.
Did she want to commit suicide?
Yeah, remember at the CDC?
Oh, right. Yeah. How can I forget? Yes, and then someone saved her.
It was Dale, right?
Yeah, Dale.
Oh, yeah, and that whole thing with Dale, and then
Dale said, you know, you're not doing this to me. And
yeah, and she lost her sister, and, you know, she slept with Shane. That was weird. And she, remember?
When?
She had a thing with Shane, didn't she?
She had a thing with Shane?
Yes. But now, man, we need to go back.
Man, I'm totally forgetting this whole seasons.
How can you be a fan, Dad, if you don't remember every minute detail of everything?
You mean minute?
Oh my God. Okay, minute detail.
That's my point. See, every detail, even in the fact that you said minute instead of minute.
Okay, fine. Gosh, you win.
Okay. Yeah. She. Yeah. Well, I think that.
She definitely redeemed herself by the end of the season, though.
She would have been before she died. Redeemed if she killed the governor.
Straight up, yes. When remember that scene where she slept with him and then she had the knife to his neck and she was literally about to slit his throat, but then she just backed away. Why?
Yeah.
We'll never know.
And then she said that at the end, you know, I just wanted to make things better, and
she was the peacemaker basically.
Yeah. A lot of the fans complained though because they thought that she was clueless for a while. And I think that's just the fault of the writers a little bit. They made her too clueless to the governor's
maybe
stuff.
But thinking back now, maybe I think they did it right. I mean, they couldn't not do it right. It's just for the whole story plot, everything needed to catch up before we could actually get rid of the governor or have her realize that she needed to get rid of the governor. But I think at the end of the day, it was a good season with her. And I do miss her.
Yeah, I liked her character. The actress as well. I think she was like right into the character and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Really portrayed Andrea well.
So do you want to get into some fan feedback?
Yeah, what are we going to be talking about in this episode? Because the show is not running, so what are we talking about?
Besides just talking about the show in the past episodes, we will be reading feedback from our last podcast and also about our upcoming trip to Walker Stalker Con. And also, we have a special interview with Davey Barker, who is the author of Survivor Max, Too Smart to Die, Volume 1. We interviewed him a few months back.
We interviewed him like around at the end of Season 4 of The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
After it finished. because it was all like at the time when we were trying to figure out what was going to happen next. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Terminus.
And basically, Davey, was he? Yeah, he emailed us once, asked us if we were going to Walker Stalker Con. Was it Chicago or some Walker Stalker Con? Because he was going to be there and he wanted us to read the book and tell him what we think. And mm-hmm. then he also added a feedback. What is it? What is that called? A review? Like you add a quote in the back of the cover of a book or something.
Yeah. So.
So I'm featured in that book as just a review.
On the back cover.
On the back cover. Yeah. You'll see my name and Jasmine, Walking Dead Girl.
Jasmine from the Walking Dead Girl. So yeah, we gave feedback on that book.
It was a very good book. You should definitely check it out. Server Max, Too Smart to Die.
And we're going to be playing the interview we did with Davey later on in the show. So let's get into the feedback first. What's our first one?
Our first one is from Facebook. Actually, all of them are from Facebook. This one's from Laura. She says, one thing I would like to point out, which I've noticed a lot of people are missing from the trailer, is in the part with Beth. When the dialogue goes, everything we do has to be for the greater good. Lots of people think it's the lady cop saying that. It's not. It's Beth saying that line. It's definitely Emily Kinning's voice. Then the lady cop replies, in here, you're not the greater good. You're part of the system. Just thought I'd point that out.
So what do you think of that comment?
It makes sense. Because remember how in the last podcast we were kind of like discussing, wait, why would she say that? You know what I mean? The cop, why would she say all of that? Because it was kind of like contradicting.
Yeah, because it was contradicting. It says everything we do is for the greater good.
In here, not the greater good. You're part of the system. So I don't know. Wait, are you not doing the greater good? So now kind of makes sense that Emily would have said, or Beth would have said that.
Well, why would Beth say that? Why? Because of her role as part of the other group.
Oh, she disagrees with the cop and like her like what she's doing, whatever at the system thing they're doing, and she's basically saying whatever you do has to be for the greater good. Mm. And then the cop is like, no, in here you're not the greater good. Mm. That doesn't exist, kind of thing. So she's just having a conversation.
Yeah, I'm still curious about to find out what that place is and how it's been maintained all these years.
Mm-hmm.
In the apocalypse with having doctors and stuff and cops wearing uniforms, like it doesn't make sense to me how that would that whole place
maybe
still
there's
exists.
A working government maybe. That we don't know about.
Yeah, it has to be in Atlanta somewhere.
Do you think Beth is going to be part of the spinoff? It's going to be like Orange is the New Black, Walking Dead style.
Have you even seen that show?
I've seen the first episode. Okay. Well, because it's just like a prison kind of thing. Anyway.
So talk about the spinoff. What is that? People might not know what you're talking about.
There have been rumors, and it's now confirmed, that a spinoff, well, it's kind of not really a spinoff, but it's basically...
It's in the same world.
It's in the same world as The Walking Dead, but just taking place in another place in the world or in the country. And it's just a whole new characters, new scenario, but still The Walking Dead, still zombies, but it's just different characters, I believe, and different plots.
Yeah, and they're currently writing... They're writing the script right now for the first few episodes, and that's what we've read online. And I'm excited.
I'm excited, too.
I don't know what they're going to call it.
And once it comes out, we're definitely going to be making a podcast about it.
We're going to probably spin off. We're going to spin off.
We're going to have our own spin off. This is going to be great. Laura wasn't finished talking. She still has more stuff to say.
Oh, Laura, yeah. So what else does she say?
She says... I think I agree with your opinion that Carol may die this season. I'm also thinking that we may lose Beth too, which would make me incredibly sad because we are finally getting to know Beth and I really like her. Do you think the Walking Dead writers would be so cruel to Daryl as to take away both Beth and Carol? ? Because in the trailer, we didn't really see much of Carol at all.
So do you think we need Beth and Carol as kind of a love interest to Daryl?
Both? A love triangle?
Well, I don't think Daryl...
Well, Daryl cares about them both. May it be romantically or not romantically. You know what I mean? It's only people that Daryl actually cares about.
I think Daryl is a caring person.
Just to select few.
In general, but I don't think... And he probably has this weird relationship with women because of his back...
in general?
Like, because of his background, like where he came from, an abusive family and everything.
And there's always people that want to take care of him.
And he's never kind of been let... hasn't been allowed to feel like...
Was he a stud?
No, he was like a redneck guy who, you know...
You don't think he ever had a relationship?
Yeah, I don't think he was allowed to be sensitive, right? Because every That's time true. He was...
But just because you can't be sensitive doesn't mean you can't have flirtations with a woman.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I just have a, I just have a feeling that he's awkward around women.
Oh, yeah. Right? That's true.
Because, like, remember in the prison, like, in season four, where Carol was kind of making advances towards him?
She was? I thought she was just making pet names and being nice.
Pookie and offhandedly making comments.
Well, just, I thought it was, like, more of, like, making fun of him.
I think she was trying to come on to him. And then,
you think so? I have to go back now. I think what do you guys think?
And then Daryl was just brushing her off, like, oh, stop it.
Is that his voice? Oh, stop it.
Come on, stop it.
Ah, stop. I don't know.
You know, like...
Maybe he didn't even realize that she was making... I don't know. Well, we gotta... You let us know.
Carol was totally into him, and he totally brushed her off.
What? You think Carol was totally into him? Maybe, no. Okay, yes. No. Daryl was more into Carol.
No.
But he just didn't know how to show it.
Well...
I don't even remember. I'm just making up stuff.
No, yeah. I mean, and then...
There was a thing going on. Mutual.
At the prison.
At the prison, okay.
When things were good. Before the disease. Oh. Before the disease hit.
Oh, so during when we didn't really get to see anything?
Yeah, before the disease hit.
Okay, well, okay, fine.
Remember they were like cooking.
If they actually did have a thing, you would think it would be more obvious.
Yeah.
Come on.
It was very subtle. I'm just saying that it's all because Daryl doesn't know how to express himself around women.
Okay.
He keeps his emotions hidden.
Well, besides that, do you think we'll lose both, Beth and Carol? I think we're going to lose Carol, but I don't think we're going to lose Beth because...
I think Beth is going to be around. They're going to find her.
She still has that whole theme, that thing going on there, and she needs to find the group too.
They'll find her eventually.
Yeah.
Or she might run off and join the other group in the spinoff show.
That's true. I would be okay with it.
And then she gets this whole new life in this other show.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have crossovers.
Oh my God, crossovers. You know what they do in?
But yeah.
The Vampire Diaries has a spinoff called The Originals, and sometimes they do crossovers. They've taken characters from The Vampire Diaries, and they've taken them to The Originals, and then sometimes they bring them back. It's kind of cool.
But in this, it'll be literal crossovers. Like, they'll have to walk or travel, like, to another city.
There'll be a special underground train. They'll travel between. I don't know.
No, I'm just saying, like,
like, it'll just magically.
They'll have to, like, show up in this other area.
Just like in Glee, where everybody can afford to get plane tickets to travel from freaking New York to, like, some hick town, okay, in middle of nowhere.
Every week. Like, weekend
travel.
Like,
they never left.
Like, oh, all of a sudden, the whole.
I'm singing a solo back in high school. Oh, wait, next day, I have to go sing and perform in New York.
Right.
It's like. Okay, and you're supposed to be broke, living in an apartment, in a loft, like you can't afford anything? Okay.
Speaking of traveling and being in another place the next day.
Two places at the same time.
You kind of went into this whirlwind trip a few days ago.
Yes, I did. I had my own
on Friday
adventure.
You drove with a friend to LA.
To Los Angeles. Actually, it was Pasadena.
Oh, well, excuse me.
Which is... not technically LA, but everyone says it's LA. Even they said it was LA. Well, I went to LA for the reason that I bought tickets to a One Direction concert a year ago, and it was on Friday. So I left school. I didn't even go to school Friday. I ditched.
You
ditched
school?
Which reminds me, you need to call school. You need to call the school.
I do? Why?
And let them know, excuse my absence, or else I can start out of school.
Mom called.
She already did?
Friday morning.
Okay, great. Awesome.
Well, she called and said, my daughter's not coming to school.
That's all you need. They don't care what the reason is. They just, as long as the parents said that they were excused from school.
And then they asked her why, and she said, well, she went to a concert.
She said that? No. Oh, I was like, I work in the office, so the people they talk to, I'm going to have to see on Tuesday or on Monday and talk to them.
As long as they don't listen to this podcast, she'll be fine.
Oh my God, no. Because I was supposed to go on a field trip on, well, I'm not supposed to. I had an option to go to a field trip for college on Friday, but I didn't because I knew I had to go to the concert. So I picked concert over college.
But on Saturday, you had to be in the morning at a rehearsal.
Yeah, a 9 a.m. rehearsal.
So you had to fly out back 6 a.m.
Yeah, so I had to wait. So technically, okay, this is what happened. We got back to the hotel after the concert at like around 2 o'clock.
2? I thought it was like midnight.
No. Because there was traffic. Over at 12, and we were looking for our car for like an hour because it was on a golf course and we were going in the wrong direction. We literally went around the whole golf course trying to find our car.
Wow.
Because they decided to put the parking in a golf course. And then my friend's parents wanted food, so they went to like a taqueria or something. I don't know where they went. I was half asleep. And then we got back to the hotel at like around 2 o'clock. I didn't sleep until like 2:20.
And then you woke up an hour later.
Yeah, at 3:30 and then left around 4 and then drove all the way to the airport. I had to call a taxi on my own.
So this was basically your first independent
flight
trip where you had to
rely on myself.
Take a cab on your own. Your first first cab by yourself.
Is it? It is.
The first flight. Well, not the first flight by yourself.
Kind of a first flight, because at first getting there, getting on the plane and getting off.
Yeah, it was your own doing.
Mm-hmm.
So you survived.
I was by myself, because the last time I went on a trip, it was a week to Boston and
New York. But you went to the wrong gate though.
I didn't. Oh, okay, here's the thing. My ticket on my mobile ticket told me it was gate 70A, and then I got to the airport and it changed. So I had to go walk all the way to the next terminal, and my legs were super sore from the concert the day before.
Oh, poor you.
Yes. First world problems here. Serious stuff. Anyway, yeah, I got on the plane. It was an hour, and then it wasn't that bad. And then I came back. We drove from San Francisco back home, and I waited. And we didn't go home. I went straight to rehearsal.
Yeah.
I took my script in hand. And then I told my director. She was just like, she was amazed. She said, so you're basically running on 48 hours without sleep. And I'm like, yeah. And she was like, she made an announcement to everybody. She said, this is dedication. I was like, oh yeah, score. You know, kudo points.
Dedication to your upcoming high school drama production.
Yes. When you put high school in front of it, it makes it so much lamer, basically.
It's like a high school musical, but it's not a musical. It's drama.
It's a drama.
And if you want to know what it is, listen to our previous episode.
Yeah, guys. God, get with the program.
Another feedback we got was from Nikki. She says, yay, I was happy to see a new episode this morning. Glad you guys are back. And good for you, Jasmine, for getting your first job. Vans Rock.
What? That last Vans Rock. Wow, that was weird.
That's
the way you said it was weird.
That was the most exciting I've ever been.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Nikki. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the feedback and Laura for the feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, we get a message from Richard Rude King. Well, how rude.
Why you gotta be so rude?
Richard Rude King says, been a loyal listener since your first pod. Love them all. Good to hear you again. Keep on keeping on. A great distraction for me at work. When I read that, keep on keeping on, it reminded me of the phrase, keep on trucking.
What is up with you and phrases today?
Keep on trucking. I don't know. I think it was from the 80s or something, or from the 70s. I don't know. It has basically this character with this. He's walking with his thumb up like,
oh my God,
like this. It's like, and then his boots are huge and he's walking.
Is that cowboy boots?
Keep on trucking. It's a.
I've never.
See, look.
Oh.
She told you.
That's cool.
Keep on trucking. It's basically this animated cartoon guy that he's walking with these big shoes, and
they're not big shoes. It's just that the perspective is terrible when drawn. It just makes it look so huge.
If you don't want to know what we were talking about, okay.
It's a tattoo.
We just saw a picture of a tattoo on someone's butt. Okay.
Google images.
Keep on trucking. Just do a Google image on that. You'll see what I'm talking about. Anyway, thank you for all the feedback. We appreciate it. And it makes our day every time we see a message pop up.
Gives us life. Literally, this is the only sustenance we get.
Okay, before we go on to our next topic, which is Walker Stalker Con, do you want to talk about a little bit about some stuff we're doing behind the scenes for our new logo?
Oh my God.
Okay, so
at first I was like, what are you talking about, Dad?
Do you want to talk about it a little bit?
Yes, let's talk about it. I don't know how much to say. I'm not going to say much.
Well, I think we're going to announce it on our next episode.
Oh, really? You think so? That's the time.
I think we'll be done by then. But just talk a little bit about what we're doing.
Pretty much, we're trying to revamp our logo because you think it sucks.
I don't think it sucks. I think it's outdated. I think we've kind of grown out of that original logo.
I like it. I mean, but from what I've seen so far of the stuff, the ideas that we have, it's terrible. But like the new one, the new ones are, I don't know. I don't know what to say without giving anything away. But basically, can I tell them the process?
Yeah, we went to 99 Designs.
Yeah, 99designs.com, which is basically sets up like a competition kind of thing where we say what we were looking for, and then people just send in entries of their artwork for logos, and you kind of pick and choose which ones are the best, and you talk to them, say how they can modify it, and pretty much like a competition, and there's like different rounds and stuff.
And you were kind of skeptical. It's like, what's going on? And yeah. Well, the thing is, we got very little attention at the beginning, and then people started coming in with designs, and that to the point where we have like two really good designs, and we don't know which one to pick.
Yeah.
But I think
I know which one I want already.
I think
from the day one, it's a kind of not fair.
I think our fans are going to really like the new logo, and to the point where they're going to rush out and buy all our logo and print it on t-shirts.
Yeah, merch. We might have merch because the logo that we're thinking merch, about looks so good.
Yeah, the logo is really awesome. And I think
I want to put it on a mug. I want to put it on a t-shirt. I want to put it on a skateboard. I just want to put it on my face.
You want to put it on your face?
Maybe not my face. I want to get it tattooed on me.
No.
On my butt.
don't do that, please.
If that's how good it is, okay? You guys got to get like vamped for it.
Yeah, it's the logo is really awesome. And if it's
I'll
the
give
one,
you the color. There's one color.
There's multiple
colors. There's multiple colors, but I'll give you half of a color. It starts with a G. That's all I'm giving.
Okay, what color started with G?
Green.
Okay, woo. That was not much of a secret. But yeah, there's some green in there. What's funny was they were on the form, it says, pick your color or enter in the color, and I put zombie green.
Uh-huh.
As the color.
Whatever that means. Which is pretty much looks like puke green. Yeah.
But there's some green in there, some zombie green. Yeah, so we're really excited about this logo, but we're going to release it and announce it next week. Probably put it on our Facebook page, put it all over our website.
So if you're following us on Facebook, you'll be the first to know.
Exactly. It's really cool, guys.
Exclusive.
And we
first
hope,
preview
hope
look.
You guys like it. But,
we should do a teaser. We should like take a picture of like a screenshot, a small part of it, and
just post
it.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking of just taking out this part.
Uh-huh.
And just posting it. Maybe we'll do that. A sneak
peek. To get people like all vamped up for it. Yeah.
Take a snippet of the logo and just post it up. You want to talk about Walker Stalker Con? That is coming up really fast. I think there's still tickets available if you want to get a general admission.
Do you think there's any more VIP stuff?
No, there's not. But there's general admission tickets you can get. And yeah, so...
So basically, we will be in Atlanta for this convention, October 17th through 19th. And it's coming up pretty fast now.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost around the corner. And we will be joining other podcasters in a kind of like a fan get-together on the Friday, October 17th, at some restaurant.
It's at 8 p.m.
That's all we know.
It's at 8 p.m. And it's probably going to be at the restaurant in the hotel.
Is it the Rock? The one restaurant we went to?
A Hard Rock Cafe. I don't think it's going to be there. I think we're going to do it in the hotel.
Oh, in the hotel?
Yeah.
Well, for people who have never been to Walker Stalker Con and you are going, was it the Hard Rock Hotel? I mean, oh my God. The Hard Rock Cafe is pretty much a spot where a lot of the celebrities from...
You think so?
Didn't we saw Big Tiny there.
Oh, yeah.
We saw like...
A bunch of them walked through there, yeah.
Yeah, so stuff.
It was really surreal because at the same exact time, there was...
Was it America's Got Talent or was it American Idol?
No, not American Idol. It was...
The Sing-Off? No, it was...
It was America something. America's Got Talent, probably.
Some kind of talent show.
I think it was America's Got Talent.
Uh-huh.
It was tryouts or something.
Auditions. Auditions, yeah.
Yeah, at the same time.
So
another part of the convention center.
So we walked by people who are like had like stickers on them, like numbers and stuff. And yeah,
and a bunch of them acrobats or something came into the Hard Rock Cafe
and they did a bunch of flips and stuff.
I know, you remember that?
Yes, I just remember that.
It's like we're sitting there eating dinner and
here are these people just flipping around the whole freaking restaurant.
A bunch of teenagers walk in and they start flipping
like, all in the same freaking jumpsuit.
Jumping over each other
while eating burgers.
That was funny.
Yeah.
But
I wonder if there's going to be anything else going on, but that was pretty cool. But Vampire Diaries is going to be joining Walker Stalker Con, even though they're not related to zombies. They are supernatural beings. I mean, real life. We're talking about real life here. And I'm super excited.
And yeah, you got we got tickets for photo ops with them.
With the two hottest people on the planet.
So you're going to be in the middle. You're going to be in the middle.
Yes.
And they're both going to be looking at you or something.
We have to do a pose. Oh, they have to be biting my neck or something because they're vampires.
Oh, yeah. You can have them pretending to bite your neck.
Oh, my God. But we have to get their face so everyone knows that it was them.
Yeah. How do you do that? How do you bite necks and show your...
I'm pretty sure they're actors who've taken photo shoots before. I'm pretty sure they know what to do.
Okay.
More than me.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah. Oh, which reminds me, I started watching this new show with a friend called Lost.
Great.
And you're so skeptical.
It's not a new show. It's an old show.
I know it's an old show, but it's new to me. Okay. And because my friend really was like really selling it to me. And I was like, okay, fine. He even gave me all the awards that it's ever won and all that stuff. And I was like, okay, fine. I'll watch it. And I'm in love with it kind of. Probably for the reason that one of the people from Vampire Diaries was in that cast. So, which I'm going to take a picture with at Walker Stalker Con.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that's kind of like my hook for that, but I really liked it. I really like it.
You've seen 3 episodes?
4, actually. I watched one today.
Really? You sneaked in another episode?
I mean, it wasn't hard. I did all my homework, okay?
Jeez.
They're only like an hour long. Like 45 minutes, really. Stop judging me!
Okay, fine. You've become engrossed and lost.
Yes.
Maybe we should do a podcast about it.
Actually, I was thinking about doing it with my friend. We beat you to
what?
It.
What?
We beat you to it. I'm sorry.
You're abandoning me?
Yes, Dad. I'm just kidding. No, I love you, Dad.
Okay, never. Thanks. I have an exclusivity on you. You know that, right?
What does that mean?
That means you can only do podcasts with me.
Really? Do we sign a contract in blood or something?
Yes, you're my daughter. You are of my blood. There's no signing in blood. You are my blood.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, just to close off the Walker Stalker Con part, we just want to mention that we will be staying the day after the convention on the Monday, and we'll be going to go through the Atlanta movie tours, which I'm so excited about.
It's going to be so awesome.
And we're going to
see all the sets that they filmed on
The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
There's two tours, 9:30 a.m. and 2:30 p.m. And
if you want to buy tickets for that, if they're still selling some, it's AtlantaMovieTours.com.
You know, we hopefully we'll have our new logo with our new t-shirts done by Atlanta. So we'll maybe be able to wear them.
Ooh. We'll make more just so that people can get to my fans.
Maybe we should bring a bunch and just give them away to our fans.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah, so now that we got a cool logo with new cool t-shirts, we should have giveaways.
Oh my God, merch.
Okay.
I just want to say that because all the cool people have merch, which is short for merchandise.
Thank you for clarifying that because our audience is completely...
I didn't know for a long time. I was like, merch? What the heck? What are merch? But now it's just like, oh yeah, we got our own merch.
We're so excited about this logo. It's unbelievable.
It's the biggest thing to happen to us in a long time, which is sad.
It's really sad. We're sad, sad little people.
Okay.
Okay, so let's go over the schedule. I know those of you that won't be at Walker Stalker Con are going to be sad, and you're probably saying, why are you telling us this for?
You can fast forward
if
you
want. You're just teasing us. But the Friday schedule... Oh,
there's a bromance panel? Oh my God, we have to go to this panel. Oh my gosh. Andrew Lincoln and Norman Reedus, Saturday, 1 o'clock.
Be there.
Or be square.
They call it the bromance panel. It's Andrew Lincoln and Norman Reedus. And it looks like, so they have two rooms. They have one big convention hall panel and they have the main room. So they have things happening in parallel, which is kind of cool. But if you notice, Jasmine, on the Friday 1 p.m., there's Walker Stalker's podcast live.
Oh my God!
And that looks like it's going
to... So the Walker Stalkers...
Yeah, I think the Walker Stalkers are going to do a live podcast, which is pretty awesome.
We'll crash that.
Yeah, we'll definitely be there. And
Zombie Ethics...
There's Zombie Ethics.
Which the author, Davey Barker, is going to be there.
Yeah, he might be there as well. And there's a bunch of other interviews. Jeff Kober, who played the lead guy in the Claimers, remember?
Oh, yeah.
I got
the one that
his neck ripped off by...
And Irony Singleton has his own panel, too.
Yeah, he's pretty popular. Michael Rooker looks like he has his panel. There's
Dead Men and Dead Women. What is this?
It's the little guys.
It's Explain.
It's Lou Temple, Nick Gomez, Daniel Thomas May. They just have the last names. I have to think.
Is it
remember
Travis
first...
Love? I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, so it's basically a bunch of the prisoners and a bunch of the lesser known characters in the show
that were killed off pretty soon.
That were killed off. Yeah.
Ooh, Emily King is gonna have her concert. Yay.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you're a Walking Dead fan and you're not at this convention...
I'm sorry.
Then I would do everything I could right now to get a general admission, at least. Be in the presence in the same building as...
Yes.
...as these people, as Andrew Lincoln. Emily Kinney's going to do a little mini concert. She did that last time. It was kind of cool.
And we kind of missed half of it because it was really late. But it was really good.
But there's, like, ton more people.
And there's also Zombie Bash. The official party of Walker Stalker Con Atlanta.
Yeah, there's a zombie bash.
And some celebrities actually show up there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to blow your mind as far as, you know, how many stars from the show are there, how many zombie-related content there is. It's really incredible.
And then Saturday we have the Harp Twins. Who are the Harp Twins?
I think it's the baby.
I can't believe it.
I think it's the baby.
I can't believe it.
It's Rick's... Oh, no, that's not... No, that's not Rex. No, I just Googled Harp Twins. That's somebody else.
Who are the Harp Twins?
I don't know.
They have their own panel.
Hmm.
Maybe there's some supernatural group.
Okay, I don't know if it's the right Harp Twins, but basically it's...
They're literally Harp Twins.
There's two blonde women that are holding harps. And the only Walking Dead connection is I see here the Walking Dead theme... let me just visit the page. Okay, we're just going on the fly here. So.
Forbidden.
No, it's forbidden.
What?
So I don't know what the Harp Twins are. Maybe they played the song of the Walking Dead with harps, or maybe their harp music is used as the theme or something.
Harps? Do you remember hearing harps?
No, I don't.
Really?
I don't. I don't know what the connection is. Okay, well, we're going to have to find out.
Yeah. And also, Jay Bonansinga, I hope I'm saying that right, the writer for the official novels, is also going to be there. He has his own panel. Oh, that's pretty sweet.
Yep.
And at the Grove, or what's the Grove? Oh, the Grove. The Grove. That was the episode with Melissa McBride, Chad Coleman, and the two kids, Kayla Kennedy.
Oh, they're going to do a panel about that.
Yeah.
A topical panel.
John Bernthal and Chandler Riggs have their own panel. We have to go see that one.
Awesome.
This is going to be great.
Oh, because John Bernthal...
wasn't there.
Oh, John was... Well, his character in the show was kind of becoming like his father.
Did they put him together? Oh, my God.
That's why they put him together, because...
He was like the father figure.
Yeah, he was a father figure that... Because Rick was, you know...
Rick.
Yeah.
Back in season two.
I think that's why they put him together. It's like...
Oh, my God. The feels.
A real father is here.
Oh, my God. What? Oh, my God.
I am your real father.
Will the real father please stand up? No, but that's... They should have John Bernthal, Lori, and what's the baby's name? Oh, my God. Judith.
Yeah.
That'd be funny.
Well, they should do a photo op with that.
Ooh. Ooh.
the real family.
The real
family photo.
But we know that Judith is not.
So there's a ton of more stuff like I want to talk about, but this is getting to be a long, long episode.
Vampire Diaries, they have their own panel. We have to see it. Oh my God.
Vampire Diaries has their own panel.
Why did you say it like that for? The Vampire Diaries has their own panel.
Because I don't like that show.
I don't care. Pretend to.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Dad, stop. Yeah, so it's going to be great.
Yeah.
But
there's a.
Melissa Hutcherson is going to be there.
I found that there's a bunch of other people that are not kind of Walking Dead related, but they're zombie related. For example, I told you this, Jasmine, there's a YouTube channel I stumbled across by accident. You know how YouTube is. Called Zombie Go Boom.
Zombie Go Boom.
And what they do is they have different weapons that they use to kill this fake zombie head.
Mm.
And they test things out. I showed you it, right? Mm-hmm. You saw it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it looks like they're going to be at Walker Stalker Con.
Yeah, I saw that.
They're going to be demoing some of their... material, I guess.
It's going to be pretty sweet.
So there's a lot of things to do. I don't know if we'll be able to do all of that stuff and see all these things.
We will. Now that we're not getting freaking VIP for Andrew Lincoln because somebody did not think about it on time.
I thought about it. It was just the battle of the internet. Internet bits and bytes.
For those of you who don't know, Andrew Lincoln is life. For me, at least.
There was a disappointing announcement, though, related to Walker Stalker Con. I know I mentioned this to you.
Wait, have you? How disappointing.
I forwarded you the email, right?
Oh, yeah. Somebody bailed out.
One of the guests...
Who was it?
Bailed out. So, David Morrissey canceled.
What? I don't remember this.
I forwarded the email.
I know, but I just...
Because we had a...
I was probably in school, Dad. Come on.
Well, the thing is...
Wait, what?
We had an autograph session with David Morrissey.
We need him to sign our thing. We need to complete it.
Got
to
put his name right next to Rick's just to piss him off.
Yeah, right above Rick's.
But yeah, we had a autograph paid for David Morrissey, and he canceled and we got refunded automatically. So.
And it went to the fund for Ian Somerhalder and Paul Wesley, the Vampire Diary people. So I guess it's not all bad.
And now that I'm going through the list, looking at the different characters, I noticed that someone else canceled. Sarah Wayne Callis canceled as well.
Who played Laurie,
which is kind of sucks. But hey, I mean, at least we got her autograph last year, and we got to talk to her. So that was good.
She's so tall.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that's sad.
Yeah. Well, sad and happy because this just. One less thing we have to worry about.
Worry about to race
less,
to.
One less person we have to run to and get to.
But is it confirmed that Andrew Lincoln will be there?
It's been confirmed. If he cancels, there's going to be a riot.
people will riot.
Literally, I think there's going to be a riot at the convention if Andrew Lincoln misses it.
I like how the top three guests are Andrew Lincoln, Norman Reedus, and John Bernthal.
Yeah, they're at the top there. Andrew J. West, nobody knows his name, but he's the...
You will know his name.
He plays Gareth in the new series, new season.
Did we get signings for him?
Yeah.
Cool.
We're going to get him on the poster here.
So that's pretty much all that we've covered for the announcements. And now let's get to the meat of the podcast.
What was this so far? The bread?
No, it was the appetizers.
Yeah, let's get into the interview, this awesome interview we did with Davey Barker. And go out and get his book, which is Survivor Max.
Too Smart to Die, Volume 1.
And he's working on Volume 2 and 3 as we speak. And
literally, as we speak.
And if you go to his Facebook page, which we'll mention in the interview, he actually putting up certain chapters of the book, and you can go in and review them and give him feedback.
And ideas and stuff. So it's kind of like an interactive thing.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. So this is it.
Today we have a special guest. His name is Davey Barker, and he's the author of Survivor Max, Too Smart to Die. His book was released about 2 months ago.
And Jasmine had the opportunity to do a preview of the book, and her review is on the back cover, so we're pretty excited about that.
Yes, and he's here with us.
How's it going?
Hi, Davey. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And to get right into this, can you give a little summary of your book?
Yeah, it's essentially, I mean, it's a zombie apocalypse. It's pretty conventional as far as the zombie is concerned. But sort of what's unique about it is that the main character, Max, is alone, and he's sort of surviving by himself. And he's too weak to fight off an adult, and so he has to use his mind. He has to sort of set traps and snares. People have called it Home Alone with Zombies. And so it's about the way that a child would survive in the zombie apocalypse. Specifically a science-minded child.
Did anything in particular inspire you to write this book or inspire you while you were writing this book?
So there's kind of an interesting story. I attend a sort of regular event in New Hampshire called the Porcupine Freedom Festival, which is sort of like a camping event. And so I had some time to hang out with an author there named Taryn Lupo, who writes books about pirates. And I had this idea for a zombie novel. Because he told me essentially that I need to write what I love and not try to write sort of an epic trilogy on my first try or whatever. So write what's fun for me, and I like zombies. So I was on the plane riding home from New Hampshire, writing chapter one about, and I just knew that I wanted a boy. So I was writing a first day of school, and by utter coincidence, the woman sitting next to me was a middle school science teacher who was grading zombie stories written by her class.
Wow.
So she let me read all of the papers, all the sort of zombie stories written by these students. And a lot of Max's ideas in the story came from their papers. And as a result, I dedicated the book to them, and they sort of went back and forth with me while I was working on the chapter, and they're all very excited about it.
Well, that's an interesting coincidence that you got that inspiration, like, while, you know, flying on the plane.
Yeah, it's very weird. It was kind of, I don't know, it felt like providence or something.
Yeah. So your original intent wasn't to do a zombie book, was it?
No, I was sort of struggling writing an alien story for a while. And it just sort of came to be too much research. Like, I was trying to write this story where like aliens were coming from another planet, and they were looking for teenagers with this particular sort of brain chemistry, and they had to go to all these different countries all over the world. And so every time I introduced a new character, I had to do all this research to figure out what life for a teenager is like in that other country. And so I went to this friend of mine, and I asked, like, how do you get over this problem? And he said, you have to write what you know. You have to write something that is easy and fun for you, and get used to the idea of finishing a novel. It's sort of like weightlifting in a sense. Like, you have to start at the weight you're comfortable with, and then once mm-hmm. you get comfortable at the new weight, you add weight on the bar. You don't start like benching 250 pounds, right?
Yeah.
So finishing a novel itself is a kind of skill that you have to get accustomed to doing. And the way you do that is you write something that is easy at first. And so this is my fun, easy read, right? And I wrote about zombies because when it comes to the things that I read myself and the things that I watch myself, that's the genre that I like the most. So I know it the best.
So why did you choose a fifth grader specifically as your main character?
I don't know. There's something about that age. It's sort of middle school, right? So it's not quite high school. Like, high school can be sort of very adult and very political, but it's not elementary school. It's sort of like when people first begin to feel a sense of sort of personal autonomy or personal decision making. And maybe, like, for me personally, that's when I first started having my first confrontations with authority, especially at school. And so it's sort of like that's the age to start a coming of age story. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a 3-book deal, and this is sort of the introduction of Max as the main character. But as the sort of story progresses through the other 3 books, there are other characters that come into play, and sort of time passes and Max sort of comes of age. That's sort of the point. And I just feel like it's a great age to be, and it's an age that I enjoyed being. So, mm-hmm. you know, and it's a good it's the right audience, too.
One unique aspect of the book is, you know, how Max is very resourceful, and he has, you know, he employs different techniques to help him survive, you know, and also to learn about how the zombies, you know, operate, so to speak. Can you talk a little bit about his resourcefulness?
Right. So this is sort of an homage to the Porcupine Freedom Festival. He's a member of a group called the Porcupine Freedom Scouts. And as a result, he has sort of this survival training or this wilderness training. And throughout the book, he recalls these sorts of like rules that are it's sort of like the Ferengi rules of acquisition in Star Trek, right? there are these sort of rules for survival, like what you know is more important than what you have. And these are things that I've gleaned from actual sort of survivalist prepper type shows and books that I've read. And it's what makes it believable that he could survive alone. Like, he is trained to survive, in a sense, before the outbreak occurs. So I just felt like that was integral. Plus, it builds on the premise of him being sort of independent-minded and him being sort of sustainable and, you know, he's a survivor.
So most zombie apocalypse stories create sort of a set of basic rules for their zombie infection. For example, if they're slow walking or fast-paced, if the disease is transferred purely by bite or is it airborne, what are the basic zombie rules in your story?
Sure. So this actually, to some extent, comes from the middle school kids at Thornton Central School. The teacher was using zombies as a way of teaching the class about viruses. And so she had half of the students write about hidden viruses and half of the students write about active viruses. And the difference is that a hidden virus sort of lays dormant in your cells and reproduces until it has sort of a critical mass and can take over. And an active virus sort of exhibits symptoms immediately, produces an immune response, and then sort of fights with your immune system. And as I was reading these kids' descriptions of this thing about viruses, to me, it sounded like Walking Dead. It sounded like there's the active virus, which is the zombies that spread by being bitten. And then there's the passive virus, which is dormant in everyone and doesn't really manifest until their immune system is depleted in the form of death. So this is why even healthy people who die turn into zombies, because there's this passive virus. So I am sort of describing this as a symbiotic relationship between two infections. One is airborne and produces the passive infection, and one is bloodborne and produces the active infection.
Wow, that's really interesting. And that was part of one of my that part of the book where Max reads the document his father left behind was one of my favorite parts of the book, because I'm so into science and the realistic part of it. So it was really interesting to see that part. Yeah.
Well, there's going to be a lot more of that. I introduced the character of Dr. Murphy in the radio broadcast in the first show. And the whole third book is going to be about getting Max's father's research to Dr. Murphy, because she's the one who can read it.
So to follow up on that a little bit, how long does it take to change into a zombie in your world?
I haven't really specified. I like the idea that it is variable. And there's another element of the virus that I'm incorporating. And Dr. Murphy is a real person. She's a neurobiologist, and I did some consulting with her about the design of the virus. And she also lives in New Hampshire, incidentally. And so what I think I'm going to do is that, so there's this tension in the zombie genre between high-functioning and low-functioning zombies, and fast zombies and slow zombies and smart zombies and dumb zombies and things like that. So what I'm suggesting is that there's something about the human brain before you're infected that impacts the way the virus inhabits your brain. So if you're a highly aggressive person and more of your brain is sort of wired that way, then the virus finds its home there. It takes over your brain faster. It produces a more high-functioning zombie. It produces a more intelligent and more aggressive zombie. But if you're not an aggressive person, if you have a sort of peaceful brain, if that makes sense, then it's going to take longer for the virus to take over. The virus is going to have less of your brain to work with once it's taken over, and you're going to be a more low-functioning, stupider zombie. So this is why, like in the first book, the main antagonist is the postman, and that's because in the beginning the postman is kind of a jerk. And so his brain is sort of geared for the change, whereas other people are not, and so they end up more like the original classic kind of Night of the Living Dead zombies.
Yeah, I think the same it's not so obvious, but I think the same kind of approach is in the TV show The Walking Dead.
Yeah, I think there's shades of it in Romero's movies too, like Bub turns out to be a soldier. And so it sort of makes sense that he was aggressive before he changed. And that's why he's more intelligent, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. And I remember Shane at the end of season two, when, spoiler alert, he died, he resurrected a lot faster than any other.
Right. But Amy takes like 48 hours.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or 24 hours.
Right.
So yeah, I'm going to play into that a little bit. I haven't really elaborated on that yet. But that's sort of my thinking going into it, is that something about the type of human you were affects the kind of zombie you'll be.
So this is your first fiction book, I take it, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So what is how was the process in writing it? Was it like what you expected, or was it harder, easier?
I've failed to write a number of books in my life. And so in a sense, this was easier because I intentionally made it that way. Like the apartment complex that Max lives in is the apartment complex that I used to live in. So I knew the geography, right? Mm-hmm. The maps of the rooms that he's moving through are the actual rooms in that apartment complex. So I could actually walk around the room and be like, is there a line of sight here? Could I hide here? Like there are things like that that were intuitive because I was writing about the space that I was in, although I don't live there anymore. And that made it much easier. The other thing that I did was I created a Facebook page. And so if I wrote Max into a corner and I couldn't figure out how to get him out, I would post the chapter and I would invite people to read the chapter and give me advice. Like, what would you do? It was like a choose your own adventure novel. And so there are a number of places where I didn't know what to do with Max, but someone on the Facebook page made a suggestion that resolved the problem for me. And that made it easier. So I think that this was easier than any other novel I've ever tried to write before, but it was still a kind of persistence. Like I had to commit to writing a little bit every week, you know, or otherwise I would fall out of the habit.
I like how you incorporated a little bit of the internet into your books to help you write the book. Yeah, Bidergrams. Yeah, exactly. Because back then you wouldn't be able to do that. Oh, I was wondering, what is the exact kind of time span of this book? Is it, I feel like it was a couple weeks.
I don't know. I was sort of intentionally vague about time. Because I think that if you were in isolation in an apartment complex, you would lose sense of time too, especially in a power outage. But time becomes relevant because it snows in New Hampshire. So in the second book, the season changing becomes really relevant and the effect of snow on zombies becomes really relevant. So I would say that the book probably takes place in the course of about a month. Mm. And I have to really start tying down the time in the next book because he makes it to the school. And so there's sort of there are people who still believe an election is happening. And so there's discussion about the election in November. And
there's people in that world that kind of are oblivious to the to the infection right. problem.
No, they know that the infection is there. There's debate about how much is going on in DC, and there's sort of like scattered fragments of communication they've had with DC, and so some people are under the impression that there's still an election happening, and others think that there's been a sort of state of martial law declared. But it's sort of ambiguous, like they're cut off from the government, so it's hard to tell.
Yeah, I think that's kind of realistic. I mean, that's one of the biggest problems in this kind of situation is that the lines of communications are cut off, so people don't know what's going on.
Say Joel Saxon ends up being sort of the main line of communication because he's a ham radio operator, so he's operating independently. It's just a matter of having the equipment and the electricity. Yeah. Generating electricity becomes an issue too.
Yeah, after a while, that all goes down.
Right.
Yeah, I was just going to talk about that, how in the book there was some radio communication, and I was wondering if in the future books, is that going to like continue? Is he ever going to connect with him? Is Max ever going to connect with him in some way?
So yeah, Joel Saxon, it does play a role in the rest of the books, and his equipment plays sort of a role because it's about establishing communication, and that is how he makes the connection with Dr. Murphy later on. And so, especially once he gets to the rest of the Pork Scouts, the rest of the Pork Scouts have like training too. So they, you know, they know how to build an electrical generator out of a bicycle and an alternator, for example. And that's true. You can do that. I saw it at the Occupy movement and, purifying water and all these sorts of things. So yeah. Joel Saxon comes back. I think he's probably one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, he was one of my favorite too. I like the way he handled the debates between other government officials.
Right.
So how has been the response from, you know, other kids and teachers and that type of thing and readers in general?
It's been good. There's some Amazon reviews now, so those are nice to see. I saw a teacher sent me a book report that a student did on it, which is really cool. And I had a couple of requests to speak at schools sort of about being an author, like at a career day or something like that. And so I'll probably be doing that in the next month or two.
So one thing that happens right up front, you know, Max's father is infected, right?
Yeah.
And sort of his death and how it affects, it seems that Max was affected, but not to the level what I would expect that Max would be affected by his father's death.
Like I would be like devastated. I wouldn't be able to function.
You know, that's actually kind of intentional. I guess I don't want to spoil too much about the second book,
right. But
there's this thing that happens, and this is sort of this really happens with post-traumatic stress, where you bury your emotions until you feel safe, right?
Yeah.
And then once you feel safe, you're like hit with this bombardment of emotions you'd been repressing. So in the second book, when Max gets to a place of safety with more of a community and he's sort of protected by this refugee center, he suddenly like all of that stuff comes up again. And that was kind of intentional. And it's funny, I've got that criticism from a number of people. And I hope it doesn't ruin the book. But well, it is on purpose.
Yeah, I just thought maybe it was because you didn't want to traumatize kids or something or or something like that.
Well, that's another tension that is there. Like knowing that the audience is young, I've definitely made an effort to make the drama in the book more tension and less violent.
Right.
Like there's not even a lot of death in the book. It's mostly about trapping them. And he has these sorts of moral sort of conundrums about whether or not he should kill them.
So you had the audience in mind, I guess. I guess you have to at this point when you're writing this kind of book.
Yeah, because I am aiming for a younger audience. I mean, obviously, parents are going to decide. There are parents who won't let their kids read a zombie story, and there are other parents who will let them read any amount of like violence or gore or whatever. But I am sort of I'm keeping that age group in mind and trying to write something age appropriate.
So you talked a little bit about the second and third book. What else can you give away about what's going to happen in those?
I can give you the titles.
Okay.
Book two is called School Bites, and it is about Max and Ellie reaching the refugee center, which is Max's old middle school. And then book three is called Psycho Class A, and Psycho Class is, like I was saying, the architecture of the brain before infection is called a psycho class, and Dr. Murphy does this research on various human psycho classes, and Psycho Class A is the one that Max belongs to. Yeah, so I mean, I have a 3-book deal with the publisher. I'm contractually obligated to write these books now, and so they'll be coming.
Well, not only that, but I think who's ever read the first book would definitely be eager to read the second and third, because it left me on the edge of my seat. I was like, what's going to happen next?
I know. I was so disappointed when it ended. I was like, dang it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you guys want to keep making comments, I'm happy to get you a draft before the second book is published. And then maybe you can write a review for that one, too.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I definitely recommend all our listeners to go out and buy this book. It's great. Of course, you know, the audience is preteen, right, Jasmine?
Yeah,
is that what you suggest?
I think so. Yeah.
I mean, you liked it.
It was really enjoyable, even though it's for a younger audience. It's still a good story. I mean, a good story is just a good story. So.
Well, I'm aiming for the Harry Potter thing, right? Where the story's written for a younger audience, but there's enough in there for an older audience to keep it entertaining, right? So there's a lot of Easter eggs and sort of cookies hidden in there especially for sort of veteran zombie fans who pick up on those references.
Yeah. Like, I remember one part, there was like Chandler Riggs poster on one of the girls' walls. I was like, oh, hey.
Right. So yeah, why is Chandler Riggs popular in this world? That's a good question.
I thought it was interesting. I was like, yes, kudos.
Right, but most, if you're not a Walking Dead fan, then you wouldn't pick up on that. It would just be a poster on a girl's wall.
But then maybe someone might look it up and be like, oh, okay.
Yeah, there's other things, like his neighbor is Mr. Romero.
Right? Oh, okay.
And even Karen Cooper and the Cooper family, that's the family from Night of the Living Dead.
Oh.
Well, there's more. There's lots of cookies in there.
Oh, we got to reread it and find them.
Now I'm just going to reread it again just to see the cookies.
nuggets of information.
So yeah, there a lot of character names come from other zombie works, or a lot of the people are real people, like Dr. Murphy, for example, or Miss Lassard, the science teacher, is a real person. That's the woman that I met on the airplane. And Joel Saxon is actually based on Alex Jones. His name is an anagram of that host.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, I suggest everyone go and buy it. I mean, on Kindle, I just noticed on Amazon here, it's discounted for $5 on Kindle, and paperback is about $7 or so. That price might change by the time you listen to this, but I think it's a small price for a great book.
You can also read chapter one at survivormax.com. It's on the front page.
Great. Better check that out too. Yep.
So survivormax.com, that's the website for the book.
Yep. That's that'll direct you to the Survivor Max section of the publisher's website, and you can read chapter one and you can order the book there too.
And you mentioned there you have a Facebook page. Is that that approach still going to go on for book two and three?
Yeah, it's facebook.com/survivormax. And I occasionally post like Facebook notes there of chapter fragments and things like that. And sometimes I'll post graphics there, or sort of drawings from the book were posted there before they were published. All sorts of stuff like that.
We wanted to know what your predictions were for the new season
of The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk Walking Dead.
Yeah. Well, this is The Walking Dead girls. So.
Yeah. I am really hoping they introduce something like Negan. From the comic book. I don't think that they can do Negan for TV because he just swears too much. But
so,
you know,
for those that I guess haven't read the comics, so Negan is a character from the comic book series who's really violent, right?
Yeah, he's violent, and he's what I think is interesting about him is that he isn't like driven. He's not like egotistical. Like you can hit him in the face, and he won't retaliate if it isn't in line with his agenda. Like, he's completely driven by this goal to sort of be the builder of the new society or something like that. And he's sort of one of my favorite villains. As far as Terminus is concerned, Terminus isn't in the comic books. And if they're departing from the comic books, I think that's great because it gives the writers creative control much more than they had before. Obviously, they've got to get out of the train car. But the thing is, I don't think everybody thinks it's just cannibals. And I don't think it's just cannibals because there's this weird sort of temple that they wandered through in the season finale with the candles and the names on the ground.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you saw the graphic, but I pulled the stained glass window from that room is sort of on the ground in the poster for the fifth season. So they're bringing in this sort of like quasi-religious vibe, which the cannibals never had in the comic book, which makes me think that it might be some kind of a cult, or it might be some sort of a like we venerate those we've eaten by making a shrine for them or something like that. Like, I think we're going to get creepier than we've seen before.
Yeah, I tend to agree that it's not just... Well, we know they eat people. Well,
We don't know, but...
Well,
I mean,
we saw Rick run by a bunch of
cage with a lot of corpses on a piece of tarp, so it's like it's meant to be there. Like, yeah. That's a holding place. But
I agree that the temple was kind of weird, and there's definitely going to be some kind of ritualistic thing going on. But I'm not sure.
It had the feel of like a voodoo shrine or a Dia de los Muertos sort of thing. Like, the candles sort of felt like that. And then also chalk circles on the ground is very, they call them veves in voodoo culture. So I feel like there's some sort of a like death cult thing happening.
Mm. And I find that really interesting because I like when The Walking Dead goes and talks about different aspects of what life is like after the initial apocalypse. So I'm really like curious to see how this is going to go down.
Yeah.
And, well, Rick, I mean, before he went in, he buried a bunch of guns. So there's definitely going to be some kind of thing with Rick trying to...
And
also this last episode or two, we saw a different kind of Rick.
Yeah, and Carol and Tyrese are still on the outside.
That's true. And so I think Rick now doesn't have a problem with just going ahead and doing what he has to do.
Even though it may not be...
Because he grabbed one of the people, Terminus, and killed them right then and there. Because when he saw that everybody was wearing their friend's clothes,
right?
He's like, okay, this is it. And then he just grabbed the guy.
I mean, he didn't kill him.
He did kill him.
I think the sniper shot him, didn't he?
No, he killed him.
Rick killed him?
Yeah, Rick killed him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've heard people call it an integrated Rick, that there's the violent, crazy Rick that we saw at the beginning of the prison sequence. And then there's like the calm farmer Rick, who's like the one who won't even pick up a gun if he doesn't have to. And that the sort of the end of season four is about him integrating those two things so that the violent Rick is no longer out of control. It's like a very controlled, calculated, violent Rick.
And that could be just as dangerous. I mean, well, not just as dangerous, but dangerous for others.
Powerful.
Yeah.
Well, in the train car, with his famous last line was, you know, they mess with the wrong people. I think definitely that is an indicative of that Rick is going to basically get them out of there somehow.
I'm not even worried for them at this point. I'm just like, this is going to be awesome.
Yeah, I feel confident that Rick's, like, he has his group with him.
It's sort of unfathomable, though. Like, how do you get out of a train car?
Well, they have to feed them.
Yeah, at some point.
So they have to open the door, so you could take advantage of that. I mean, you just have to, like, assess the situation.
But yeah, I feel the same way. It's like, I don't feel like Terminus has a chance. I don't really care how many of them that there are.
I think definitely Rick and his group are going to
after all
get
that they've been
there.
Through, yeah.
I don't think that's a problem. But I'm sure they're going to drag it on a little bit to kind of increase the tension for us. They're not going to make it that easy.
And they've got to use the set. Like, that's the thing. If they, like, break out and kill everyone
and leave,
then you gotta use the set.
Yeah, so I have a feeling it's gonna be kind of like the beginning half of this past season, where they had the sickness and the disease,
like they'll be stuck there.
They're going to be there for a while.
You think so? In the train car itself?
In the building, that area somehow.
I think they're eventually going to take them out of the train car, maybe just put them in this.
Yeah, but not right away.
Yeah.
It's going to take a while. They're going to stretch it a little bit.
Or maybe it's like the end of season three where they took in all of the Woodbury people who weren't the governor and his henchmen. Like, maybe there are Terminus people there that...
I think
the people locked in the other train cars. Like, if you let them all out, I bet you have an army.
Definitely those people I could see Rick kind of embracing, but everybody at Terminus is gone. Like, he has no... I don't think Rick has any problem killing everyone at Terminus.
Mm-hmm. Right.
At this point.
Was he prepared for something like that in the beginning before he entered Terminus?
Well, they... Okay, there was a sneak peek at one... No, it was a deleted scene.
Okay.
From that last episode, which somehow got posted on the internet. And it was an image from it, and it showed him and Michonne and Daryl inside a room.
I think I've seen that, yeah.
With a bunch of corpses on the ground. So it's a scene that they probably deleted, where it showed that Rick already had seen the corpses before he met the radio people, the radio broadcast people in that room, which implies that Rick kind of knew what he was getting into.
Before he entered?
Yeah. So I think that's probably why they cut it out, because they...
Was it giving away too much?
No, it kind of gives the impression to the audience, well, if Rick knew, then why did he walk into the trap?
Right.
Well, I felt like Rick was better prepared for the trap than anyone else, though.
Yeah, definitely.
Although I don't know that sending your whole party in together was the right move. Like, I feel like if you'd split up a little bit...
He could have been smarter, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think...
But I guess my feeling is that Rick... He's prepared something that hasn't been revealed to the audience, I think. That's why he's so confident, I think. Like, he has something in his mind that hasn't been revealed yet, but that's why he's so confident, and he just walked right into it. It's like, okay, fine, you know, put us in this car, this train car, we'll get out, no problem.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
You and your little
we'll see.
Predictions.
We'll see.
I mean, he's got his reinforcements, though. Like, yeah. That's the thing. Like, exactly. Like, once you have like Daryl and Glenn back, especially, and then Maggie, and I guess he doesn't know the newcomers.
But they're pretty strong.
Yeah. You know, it's like having the team assembled, right?
Like the Avengers team.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, cool. When's that? That's October, right? Seems so far away.
It is.
I try not to think about it so I won't go crazy.
Well, are you going to any conventions at all coming up?
I'm going to be at the Atlanta Walker Stalker Con, and if everything goes right, I should be speaking on the ethics panel, which I'm excited about. And you guys are going to be there, right?
Yeah, we're definitely going to be in Atlanta.
And then I heard they're doing one in San Francisco now.
Yes, they are, in January.
And I applied to volunteer at that
That's
one.
That's cool.
Because I want to be a volunteer really bad.
Yeah, so... We'll definitely go to that one. I mean, it's so close.
You should see if there's a media press pass kind of a thing.
Yeah, we do get that.
Yeah, we do.
Oh, cool.
We do get that typically when we go to these things. We try.
Yeah, we try. We try to make it sound official as possible. Like, oh yeah, we're totally cool. We are
official.
You guys have a long-running podcast. You have a fan base.
We do.
You have a Facebook page. That's as official as it gets.
That's true. But sometimes it doesn't feel like it because I'm just sitting at home on a podcast. You're just talking.
Well, you know, when I asked to be on the ethics panel, I like told them that I was a member of the Zombie Research Society, which is true. I have a membership and a t-shirt and everything. But the thing that was just a $25 membership. That's not like real accolades, right? Like, I just paid for membership. But I think that's how it works. You know, it's sort of like putting bullets on a resume. You create your own accolades.
Exactly.
That's why I tell Jasmine, it's like, you are what you say you are.
Right.
What you believe you are, and that's it.
And you guys are media.
Yeah. Yeah, we are.
I am an author.
You are. Definitely. Oh. Well, Davi, thank you for your time. It's been great talking to you. And again, encourage everyone to go to...
SurvivorMax.com.
SurvivorMax.com and read the first chapter. And if they like it, then they can go ahead and buy it on Amazon.
5 stars for me.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Davi.
Well, we've come to the end of the show. Thank you all for listening to this episode. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to us on iTunes and give us a review. We appreciate any feedback you might have. You can send email feedback to talkback@thewalkingdeadgirl.com. And as always, this is Jasmine.
And I'm Michael.
Stay alive.